You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Before we get into this week's edition of The Bloom Files, I wanted to squeeze in a couple of quick seconds and talk about our sponsor for this week, Geico. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. Now, if you excuse me, I got some case opening to do. The truth is out there. And here, who knows? Either way, we are opening up the Bloom Files here on Post-Show Recaps, an X-Files first watch slash rewatch podcast. Hello, everybody. Mike Bloom here, breaking down Season 1, Episode 10 of the X-Files, Fallen Angel. And of course, I am joined by my own angel, quite literally, Angela Bloom. Hi.
Hi.
What second in did you know that I was going to make that
pun? As soon as you started saying episode 10, Fallen Angel, like as soon as you started introducing it as the episode, I was like, oh, shoot.
Dang it. Can I change my name?
Unfortunately, no, I can't.
Well, I'm happy to have you here for many reasons. Not only, I guess you're sort of my guardian angel in this case, in that you are guiding me through the X-Files, in particular this episode as we go to Wisconsin and back.
Yeah, off to the Midwest to find some crashed aliens.
Yeah, so we're not going as far as the Pacific Northwest as we did in the first episode. We're sort of in flyover country right now, but it does connect a bit back to the pilot, at least from my purview, because we spent last week in two really capital M Monster of the Week episodes, and this really felt like more of a sequel to the first episode where there were aliens involved. We're getting back to sort of the government conspiracy, even though Cigarette Smoking Man isn't in this episode. It felt like his presence was felt. We get into what I'm assuming is a big recurring plot of they're going to shut down the X-Files.
Oh, yeah. Get ready for a lot of tentative X-Files shutdowns.
Yeah, I can imagine.
They do, I think, at some points, you know, it is sort of quote-unquote shut down. And it always comes back.
But is it ever? The X-Files exist in our hearts.
Yeah, how can you shut down the conspiracy?
Exactly. So we're going to break down the entire episode. Of course, if this happens to be your first time wandering into this, or if, like Max, you sort of just like passed out and woke up in the middle of this podcast, we're going to be spoiling Fallen Angels specifically and the episodes that we covered before it, but we're going to remain as vague and or spoiler-free as possible about what's to come, both based on episodes that we are going to watch down the line, as well as some people might be in the same boat as me, a bit of an X-Files newbie, maybe not as much of an expert as you, Angela. So we want to, you know, keep everyone relatively in the dark as much as possible so we can all enjoy these series and the surprises to come.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm going to do my best. I apologize in advance if that things slip out. It's just so exciting.
It is very exciting. And I can imagine that, you know, this is a unique episode, too, in that at the point we're watching this, there are some characters that it seems like are going to be important in the series, ones that have technically have already been introduced that we haven't gotten to yet in our watch, one that apparently gets introduced that might come back later as well. So this is like an interesting little piece of X-Files lore in that we get people coming and people going.
Well, and they definitely like to do this in the later seasons where I think maybe, this is my opinion, but I think, you know, it's a little long in the tooth. You know, they're running out of things to talk about to do. So they're like, okay, let's bring back this character from season one that like, you know, we'll tie it into this, we'll tie it into that. But I don't think at the time they were planning on having them back, you know? So it's like, it's not like Lost where it was like all written out to an extent.
Right. Oh, interesting. So there's like a Rolodex of guest characters and they're sort of finally thinking, all right, who can I pull out?
Exactly. I don't think so. That's how they're thinking, but it kind of seems that way sometimes where you're like, okay, well, that's kind of a random pull. I guess that actor was available.
Exactly. I can imagine there is some sort of board up in the writer's room of actors
who
and characters
like
that
to
we
work
cover.
With?
who have we not killed yet?
And who's nice on set?
Well, let's start, I guess, speaking of killing, let's start with our cold open here, yet another cold case cold open. And speaking of cold, we are in Wisconsin late at night, and it looks like a Reginald Vell Johnson type, I would say. I don't know, was he a cop or was he a ranger? He had the wide brim hat.
Oh, this guy? He was a sheriff.
He was a sheriff, okay.
I was like, don't we know that Reginald? It's fine.
I don't know. I tried to.
No, this was the sheriff, and he's just doing his duty. This poor guy just caught up in the middle of it all, and he is attacked by an invisible force.
Yeah, so essentially, there was this sort of disturbance that gets picked up in the forest. Of course, we get, in true X-Files fashion, the ominous white light from across a hilltop, so you don't exactly see what's happening.
But you do see that, like, blurred out effect for the invisible thing, whatever
it
is.
Yeah, so let's talk about that, because the aliens are invisible in this episode, Predator style. I do believe that I read that Chris Carter was inspired by Predator.
Yeah, well, and I think also for the time, it was not a CGI thing that was terribly complex to do, so it was something they could accomplish and have the effect of fear while, you know, not coming across as little green men.
Yeah, just take a big eraser to things. Because to that point, it's very much the Jaws effect of, it's the imagination is scarier often than the reality of what you can imagine this alien could be rather than, like you said, let's put this guy in
prosthetics. Well, and I think from your perspective, we straight up see an alien in this, whereas, like, I think we talked about in our preview podcast for the entire podcast that we're doing that, you know, it's sometimes hard to think about the X-Files as what's the big alien, because it's not just one big alien species. Right. It's all these different things. And, you know, it's more about there being supernatural, superhuman, extraterrestrial existence. You know, we're not alone.
Yeah, I think even more ridiculous than the proposition that we are the only ones in the universe is that there is only one other planet that has life on it.
It's like, we are humans and we exist and there are Martians and that's it.
Yeah, exactly. No, they stopped right there. They said two is enough to fill with sentient life.
Yeah, exactly.
And never the twain shall meet. But they do meet right here as, like we said, poor Reginald Vell Johnson ends up biting it here. But we more so get focused on what is going to be the main crux of the government side of things, which is this surveillance center in Colorado ends up picking up a bogey, at least what they think is a bogey, right? They say, like, there's some sort of wonky aircraft that crashed into Townsend at 800 miles an hour. And this is when we get introduced to the big bad of the episode, Colonel Henderson, I think his name is.
Yeah, Colonel Henderson. And I think that for this is like very much so a trope, like this sort of like the military's bad. Like, and I think that they often go back to that point where it's like the government is bad, the military's bad, you know, we can't trust anybody, that type of thing.
I did like the ominous green lighting in the surveillance center. That has to be terrible.
It looked like they were in a submarine. It was like, where are these people?
Maybe they were. Maybe. they were off the shore somewhere, because I would feel terrible. I mean, aren't there studies out there of the effects that fluorescent lights sitting under there 8 hours a day can have on your mental health? Imagine sitting in a facility that is just lit ominously green
all day. Our listeners will be happy to hear that we have many lights in our home that we have titled the good light, because I do not like fluorescent lighting. And I need it to be nice and warm and pleasant.
So you would not do well in the surveillance. I mean, it seems like
better than bright, but
yeah, I think these employees are also maybe showing a bit of a pushback against the colonel by the end of this. We get some code names here. Operation Falcon.
Yeah, so Operation Falcon is, I guess, what the operation that they would use in what war? You don't remember? They say it in the movie. It's like Operation Falcon is what they would use to go get warheads that had dropped.
Oh, it's like the reclamation project.
Yes, they talk about that. And they, I guess Operation Falcon is part of that. And it became instead extraterrestrial.
Yeah,
retrieval.
And we get the title of the episode, Fallen Angel. I guess that is, I don't know if it's factual or not, or if this is a Carterism, but it is military jargon, at least in this episode, for something has fallen and we got to clean it up ASAP. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so the colonel is like very, very interested in getting this done stat. But I don't, you know, he's going to be interrupted.
Right. So that interruption is going to come in the form of Fox Mulder, who after the credits, we come back here and
yes.
Mulder's already at the hotel. And this is odd.
Yeah.
This is very odd. Mulder is sort of suiting up to go on.
Yeah, it's very much so that scene in Batman where they're like, they're putting on the utility belt, clink,
oh, yeah.
And then something else happens in between and then clink, clink.
Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly. But this would
this
be,
is like,
this
I
would
like,
be the suiting up scene yeah. in a Batman movie, but in between there would be
yes.
flashbacks to yeah. Batman's parents getting killed because essentially Mulder's getting a flashlight. He's getting all these things in his backpack.
Yeah, this is like Adventure Barbie, Adventure Fox Mulder Barbie.
And then we get a flashback to Mulder talking with Deep Throat.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Deep Throat because I know that,
yeah.
you know, we watched episode one, we watched episode three. I believe episode two is the eponymous
yes.
Deep Throat where we meet the character. So why don't you give a
yeah.
little bit of an introduction for myself and the listeners
yeah,
to Deep Throat.
I'll give as much as I can without spoiling too much. He is the person tied to the conspiracy within the government.
Mm-hmm.
He, and they reveal this later in the episode, so it's not really a spoiler. He is actually a leader in a government agency.
I was gonna say, he's actually an alien.
He's one of the leaders in this so-called government agency to the point where the section chief at Blevins and company are reporting into him and they're trying to get Mulder, you know, kicked out, but he basically saves him. And so he's kind of playing both sides. You know, he has an ulterior motive, but at the same time, he's leaking information to Mulder to lead him on this path that is not necessarily what Mulder thinks it is. You know, he's giving him information here that's like, there's a downed aircraft and you better go find it. And in Mulder's mind, he's like, this guy believes in aliens and he's helping me. But you learn at the end that this guy, yes, that's true, but he's doing this to like lead you on this path that's, you know, convoluted and future episodes will explore.
So I'm intrigued by the pseudonym because obviously
yeah.
there is a reference to the Watergate character, but that was shrouded in secrecy.
Yeah, no, I think the whole point is that they're calling him that because he's giving information to Mulder, but he doesn't want Mulder to know who he is.
Okay.
So Mulder doesn't know who this guy is.
But I mean, he sees him face to face. Couldn't he just look him up in the database to find out who he
this
is?
This is the 90s. Stop that.
What? There's a
there's no
court
Google.
There's must be a decimal system
think
for the FBI.
So. No, everything is, no, it's all very mysterious.
Yeah, you can't look a thing up
you can.
In the 90s.
No, so I don't think that was like a, maybe they just, that's like a, an error or something. That's not touched upon
yeah,
ever.
Because I would think that Deep Throat would maybe shroud himself in darkness to that point, or I don't know, wear a mask like he's some sort
no.
of superhero. But no, he's just standing
no.
out there. He's played by Jerry Hardin, who I know from looking it up because he is the father of Melora Hardin, who is most well known for playing Jan Levinson Gould on The Office.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so he's
so
technically
weird.
Jan's dad.
Jan's dad, how great.
Another character that, you know, sort of flip-flops at a,
yes.
At a whim's notice.
Well, and I do think also from the perspective of his character arc, a lot of things happen, but he is somebody who is, in the second episode that you're talking about, tells Mulder that he knew his dad, blah, 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 like all this sort of history. So, you know, there's a little more to him than just, I'm giving you information about aliens.
So he's more than just an informant.
Yes, exactly. And for himself, he's more than just an informant, but we don't know about anything about that yet.
Well, let's talk about Mulder going Jason Bourne here.
Oh my God.
This
scene was amazing.
Between the laser grid. I think
yeah.
my favorite though is Mulder pulling the Sideshow Bob, clinging to the bottom of the,
yes,
of the army
yes.
truck that pulls into the camp.
It's like, I think I even had to think to myself and I was like, I guess that they do have training in the FBI for like anything and everything.
Right.
Even
he
when,
was one of the top agents in his field for a certain amount of time.
Yeah. And so they have field training. They have like tuck and roll gun pointing Do you know, like, the
tuck
move?
Tuck and roll gun pointing.
That's a class.
All right, do your tuck and roll gun pointing.
So, yeah, I think that, you know, clearly he's trained, but I just don't think up until this point we've seen him or Scully really be sort of, like, your typical, like, FBI action heroes. You know, they're not Keanu Reeves in Speed by any means. And so even when later in the episode Scully pulls out her gun, it's always done in a way that's, like, a little, like, I don't necessarily believe you know how to hold that gun.
Yeah, so obviously David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson do a fantastic job, to your point, of what the roles are usually.
Yes.
I think when they're supposed to be foisted in the role of cop on the move,
yeah, as you like say, action touch and roll, hero.
Gun pointing,
yeah.
it's a little odd to see David Duchovny drop out of a Jeep. I'll be completely honest about that.
Yeah. No, he does an okay job, and I think also we're putting on a lens of knowing them sort of
personally.
Of knowing them sort of outside of this as well, and just like knowing them as actors. So you're coming into this thinking of them as like the actor who plays, whereas like they're, when they were in it, they were in it. This was like, you know, the first, maybe first or so thing that they've done in their career that became big. So they're like committed.
Bad look to everyone all around here. Not only is Mulder able to get in here.
Yeah, that's also the other thing. He's like, first of all, running through the woods for a really long time.
I mean, I guess it was quite the distance.
For a 1 hour episode, like, we spent a lot of time with them and him in the woods.
He's able to break into a high security military camp.
Yeah.
Once he drops out, nobody's like, hey, you see that guy fall out of the undercarriage with the Jeep?
See that guy in that leather jacket just wandering around?
In that badass bomber jacket with the camera. It's only after, I would say, maybe about 30 seconds of him snapping pictures to say, hey, wait a minute.
Yeah, he also spends way too much time snapping pictures. Like, as an amateur photographer myself, I know that when you're looking through the viewfinder of a camera, you have no peripheral vision. So, he should just have taken, like, 1, 2, 3, get out of there. You know, like, get what you can and go. Like, he spent way too long just sort of, like, looking through the camera lens and, like, oh, look, men in suits. Oh, look.
Should he have been sketching it? Would that have been better? Would that have given him more of a 180-degree
probably
sight?
Would have taken the same amount of time, so.
Yeah, imagine, hey, stop drawing those lights. Yeah. Still drawing.
Well, the guy doesn't even say anything. He just hits him.
Yeah, and so Mulder gets taken here.
Detained.
To the colonel, where they have a little bit of a sass off back and forth here. So Mulder, essentially, the pictures that he took, to your chagrin, were pictures of men in hazmat suits, essentially, like, it looked like they were fumigating, because the tale that has been told to the town of Townsend, Wisconsin, is toxic waste dump. Mm-hmm. Everyone get the heck out of Dodge while we clean this mess up. Mulder obviously knows there's something up.
And so those people in the hazmat suits, what does that prove? It doesn't prove anything. And then he sort of turns the lens and there's like a big triangle sticking out of the ground. And even that is like, is that the spacecraft? It's unclear.
Yeah, exactly.
So like, what did he learn?
Is this just a piece of modern art? Are Wisconsinites
maybe
woke in their visual artistry?
Yeah, maybe it's also just like missed on our rewatch in like a future time where we have such crystal clear television, and we're trying to look for all these details that don't exist.
And that is interesting. So I'd imagine, did this get an HD remake?
Oh, I have no idea.
Yeah, I guess we have to pay
attention. That's a huge question.
Because I can imagine that happens often with, you know, watching, for example, the Star Trek Next Generation HD remake, something so necessarily port that well.
Yeah, no.
So after a little bit of repartee between Mulder and the Colonel, Mulder gets thrown in a holding cell. And this is when we meet, I'm going to say it right now, the spook of the week. It's got to be Max Phoenig, right?
Yeah, so spoopy. He's fun, though. He's a good guy. I feel like your initial introduction to him is that he is just a kook. Like,
he's prattling on saying, oh, I get what you're saying. Trust no one. Very wise after what happened with JFK.
It's a good impression.
thank you. I do fast-talking nerd very well.
You do.
It's almost like I live that life.
You do live that life.
But essentially, this is a guy who, on the surface, like you say, is just all in on conspiracy theories.
Right. He's even more wearing, so than Mulder. And he's wearing his NICAP hat, which you get explained is like the alien
National Investigative Committee of Aerial Phenomenon.
Which I looked up, people.
And it actually was a thing for a while that there was a community of people that were so wholeheartedly invested in the idea of alien life out there that they actually formed a group, and Max is fictionally part of that.
Yeah, and he's wearing his hat in support. But Max is cool. He's got really long hair. He's a total dweeb.
He got those John Lennon glasses.
Total John Lennon glasses. And I mean, he even kind of looks like him. But I think that he is an interesting comparison to Mulder here, because you, up until this point, you, Michael, have only really seen Mulder as he's the crazy one. Like, right. He's the guy who's like, he actually believes in aliens. And like, at this point, nobody else is saying, yes, I also believe in aliens. So this is the episode where we're introduced to Deep Throat. We're introduced to Max. We're introduced to the fact that like, there are other people out there that have had things happen to them or feel, you know, some sort of way about extraterrestrials, and not only from a government conspiracy standpoint, but from just a regular old Joe Schmo who lives in a silver stream.
Yeah. And we'll talk about that for a second, the whole idea of NICAP, because to that point, not only is Mulder in a very similar mindset as NICAP, he is a NICAP celebrity.
Yeah, so they've been following him, and he even says, like, how did you know it was me, like, the next morning when they go and find him, and he's just like, oh, I recognized you from a picture, like, whatever. And
well, because he wrote an article for a magazine under a pseudonym, M.F. Luder, which is a very small anagram. This is not, I am Lord Voldemort.
But he also, to be fair to Mulder, did not think anyone would ever read this because it was about aliens.
Yeah, but also, to be fair, if you're coming up with a pseudonym, be a little more creative than letters.
And they've also just been following the X-Files since its inception because of their records being public.
They are the travel expenses.
Yeah, their travel expenses are public records so that they can like follow where they go and then connect the dots. So this guy's just basically been like following him on a map for.
So my question about Max, I do wonder how Max got caught. Assumingly he came into the camp as well. I would imagine wearing the hat that advertises fringe organization that you are a part of is not a great way to remain surreptitious.
And as much as I love Max, he's a little unhinged.
A wee bit. Yeah. There's no hinges on that door.
Well, and so he, not only from a young age, has suffered from epilepsy, is claiming to have been abducted more than once.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, whether or not that's the case, and I can, you know, we can maybe assume that it is the case, he had an experience that affected him several times. And so now he's just a little different, a little special.
Yeah. And then to that point, if Max was indeed abducted, which we are led to believe in this episode, it does bring up a very interesting point as to how alien abductions can manifest itself in different people, right? Because Mulder didn't necessarily get abducted, but he sort of has secondhand experience that has launched him down this path. And then you have Max. It's sort of two sides of the same coin, as the point you made before. Mulder, as much as he might really believe in pretty outlandish things, is fairly reserved. He is not setting himself up in a camper with all these CB radios that are tuned into frequencies at all times, waiting for the 1 second when that confirmation
comes. There are instances in the series where he goes there, but normally he's the guy that's like, instead of that, I went to school, I did really well, I joined the FBI, and now I'm in a position to in part change in some way.
So the next morning, Scully makes her first appearance on the episode. Max is gone. Do you think, did the colonel just say, he spent a night in the clink?
Yeah, no, he's harmless.
I feel like you should keep him detained at least a little bit until your project's done.
Well, I think the colonel's main thing is to get rid of this stuff, and he has so many other bigger fish to fry that for him, it's like, this is annoying having to detain Max and detain Mulder. And so like Mulder stays there because he's in the FBI and he needs somebody to like
bail him.
Yeah. Well, to come get him and you know, like account for his actions. Whereas with Max, it's just kind of like par for the course. He probably got a fine they probably just let him go because he's like an insane person.
Yeah, it could be a thing where nobody's going to believe him anyway. Yeah, let's just let him loose.
Yeah. And I think for my understanding, this isn't the first time he's probably done this. So probably knows the colonel.
Yeah. Are they on a first name basis?
Yeah. He's probably like, okay, Max, like you got to stay overnight and then you're out of here.
Well, how's your daughter, Colonel?
Yeah, exactly.
So we end up, Scully ends up coming in. And the reason why she's there is not only to bail Mulder out, but she reveals that he is going to be undergoing a disciplinary hearing.
Mm-hmm.
He's in trouble.
Yeah. He's in trouble for a lot of things, but mostly for you know, at this point, just going and investigating stuff that he's not supposed to investigate.
Right. And Scully gives at least the line that's been fed to them, which is that this bogey is actually a, what, a downed Libyan jet that had a nuclear warhead in it. And they actually evacuated the town because they were afraid that the nuclear material was leaking out of the warhead.
Yeah. And I mean, there's no reason for Scully not to believe that because she's sort of tied into this whole, like, the government says something that's probably true. Yeah,
she's still pragmatic.
Yeah. She's pragmatic. And like, honestly, I would think that too until proven otherwise. And then like, and Mulder's like, "Hey, I'll prove it."
Yeah, I don't know about Libya though. I don't know. Maybe I've just seen Back to the Future.
Yeah, I was gonna say you're just like you're projecting your Back to the Future.
I'm thinking this is what killed Doc Brown. Clearly, something's not up
here.
Yeah,
well, I don't know. Maybe it was like a thing to just talk about Libyans.
Well, Mulder's gonna go pack up his stuff, except his hotel room has been ransacked. I just feel terrible. If you are Mulder and Scully going on these off-site missions outside of Washington, bring only your essentials because your hotel room is going to get burned down or torn through or I don't know.
Yeah, no, it happens a lot. It does. They don't learn that. But I think from Mulder's perspective, it looks like he made himself quite at home there. Like everything was like pretty well spread out. Like how many days was he there before he went on his little adventure in the woods?
Well, it's a good question because I know that in the first scene of the episode, in the lower third, it said day one. I believe by the conclusion of everything, when they go back to Washington, it's day four. So I guess he has spent, you know, probably at least a day or so there.
Yeah, and so his hotel room was ransacked, and we find out that the person who had ransacked it was none other than Max and his butt in the window of the bathroom.
Yeah, so I don't know why was
he's a doof.
Why was the phone book open?
I don't know.
Was he calling a piece like pranking.
I have a feeling maybe he was slipping through it. Like he thought something might have been hidden in there.
Like, oh yes, this agent would hide something in the phone book.
Well, yeah. So he knows this is the confusing part. He knows who Mulder is. He knows that like Mulder's like quote unquote on his side. Mm-hmm. Why is he ransacking his room? What is he looking for?
Exactly.
Couldn't he just
wait a couple of hours until Mulder's going to eventually come back there, unless he has this idea that they would kill Mulder or something.
No. Well, also the conversation they had in the holding cell, Mulder comes across as a little less enthusiastic about aliens than maybe he thought. And so he was like, okay, well, maybe he wouldn't believe me. So who knows?
Plus, we're not sure what Max, to be honest, might be on. Because we head into his home away from home here in this trailer, and it's full of all these equipment, like I said, the CB radios, these books on space, all of these diagrams for various gadgets. Like but as
star charts, etc.
And as Scully takes notice, a pharmacy's worth of medication.
Yeah, so Scully says later, like, he's on something that he's on is for epilepsy specifically, but he's also on something that is exclusively used to treat a schizophrenia. Mm-hmm. So why would he be taking that if he didn't have issues? So, I mean, who's to say you can't, like, you know, not be taking medication or taking, you know, it's like you go off, you go on.
Normalize
the medication thing. It's the aspect of like, how does that relate to him thinking aliens exist, you know?
Yeah. And I do wonder if there is an additional version of this episode where maybe you remove that invisible man and it really then raises the question, like you've talked about before, not every episode is going to be an alien. Sometimes it'll be people covering it up under the guise of an alien. Maybe it's, you could see in another universe where the episode is, okay, do we trust Max or not?
Well, so I actually, when we were talking about why did they let Max go, I'm wondering if they did let him go or if they just didn't know that he was the one the aliens were after, because later in the episode, they're chasing Max.
Right. It seems like they were calling Max to Townsend to abduct him.
Yeah. So not only are they, and then, so Max also has this special ability given to him by the aliens, I guess, to like become like radiation. Cause like later whenever somebody tries to capture him, he like turns into a ball of light.
Yeah, exactly. Which we will certainly get to. So Max gives some intel as well that in addition to the Reginald Vell Johnson types passing, seems like the fire department got hit as well. We're going to visit, I think, the third side of that 911 triangle later on. They try to chase down a dead end in Reginald Vell Johnson's wife, who is like,
oh, that poor lady.
Yeah, just she's at this, you know, she did not leave town. She's with her son.
Yeah, there's basically like a,
yeah, and what did you call it when you're in a hurricane, when you're displaced and you're staying in the high school gym?
Yeah, I don't want to say refugee because that's not the case, but similar to that one. Yeah. It's like, yeah, they're in a, like a tent. I don't know. But yeah, so they're all staying in the high school gym because they're home. Everything's being evacuated. But her and her son are there. And they basically, she insinuates that she can't talk to these people because the military told her they would not give her her husband's pension.
Right.
If she said anything.
Her dead husband's pension.
Wild.
Wild. I mean, yeah, never underestimate the government being able to wield that iron fist considering how much access they have to everything.
Yeah, no, I felt like this was like a bit of a gut punch here because you're sort of, especially, you know, Scully starting to realize that like something is up because why would the government say this to this woman? Like she was like, they can't do that. They can't, you know, they can't withhold that. It's illegal. And she was like, I'll help you. Like, I'll help you. And she was like, no. You, like, nobody help me. Everyone go away.
Well, I can imagine, yeah, especially after all that. And her husband also probably.
Oh, yeah. Also, her husband's dead.
Yeah. She's clearly. And the body is barely cold. You know,
yeah, the body either. Like, yeah. They're not giving her the body to give him a proper burial. And Scully says that's illegal.
Yeah.
So.
Even though we're going to see later on that maybe after that alien attack, you might not want to see your husband's body. Well, before we get to that, we will withhold from you all for just a couple of seconds to hear a word from our sponsors.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All right, Angela, let's come back and let's see these aliens kick some military butt.
Yeah, they really do, though, don't they?
I mean, so the colonel thinks he's got, you know, them cornered. He sends out a whole squadron to take down these aliens, but they're able to knock out the comms with static interference.
Yep.
And it's able to attack. I'm a little confused about the physiology of the alien. Obviously, again, you draw it in the mind's eye.
I can't help you.
Well, the alien cam is on the ground. It's almost like it's a snake or like a weasel or something.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I think they're going for more of like a fancy looking technology situation here where like in the 90s, there were always all these things that were like, this is advanced technology. And it was like something in like
a camera taped to an RC car.
Yeah, exactly. Stuff like that. You know, so I think that that's more what they're going for. I don't think it was thought through like, how does this actually work? You know, who cares? Does it look cool? Yes. So, you know, it's detecting the alien. It's tracking it. It tracks the alien, you know, and that's what matters.
Yeah. And the alien decides to attack back. Mm-hmm. And it's going to take us to the hospital where I would say, I think runner up for Spook of the Week is this doctor.
Love him.
He is so...
First of all, total cutie.
He's a cute guy and he's got a very hard job to do, especially amidst the weird circumstances.
Yeah, he seems like by far one of the more normal characters that we've met in a while, just like as a human being. Basically, yeah, the aliens have attacked all these men. They come storming in. Mulder and Scully have followed them because they were listening and they...
Yeah, they just straight on walk in because initially Mulder and Scully went to just interrogate the doctor about what happened to Reginald Vell Johnson. And I just love this doctor's comment though where he just inserts his own commentary saying, I hate fascists.
Yeah, and so...
Who knew there was an Antifa influence within the X-Files?
Right? Yeah. Ooh, yikes. But yeah, so the doctor's like, well, crap, this is intense. And the colonel's like, take care of my men. And the doctor's like, I will, but like, Scully's staying because she's a doctor.
So let's talk about that because you mentioned it to me while we were watching this episode. This is going to become a hallmark of the X-Files.
Oh, it where sure is.
There's a medical situation.
Conveniently.
Where people are in over their head and here comes a medically trained Dana Scully.
Dana Scully, MD, here to help. Yeah, no, she's... she's pretty much let into situations that Mulder would never be let into because she's a medical doctor. Not only is she like she doesn't just have a doctorate, she's an actual MD medical doctor. So, you know, theoretically, she is qualified to be in these situations, but it is pretty convenient. And sometimes for them as the X-Files, you know, agents, they're able to say, like, you know, Scully will often, I'm laughing because I can just hear it in my head. She's like, well, I'm a medical doctor. Can I help? And like, she always says it like, I'm a medical doctor. Like,
so like she has, if you pull her strength.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So she's always doing that and like just kind of jumping in and then therefore finding things out that she wouldn't have found out, if she hadn't have been like in it, in the weeds with the other doctors, so to speak.
We should also mention that these military guys are brought in and they are diagnosed with 5th and 6th degree burns, yeah, over 90%
radiation
of the body. All right, so I'm stupid. I didn't realize there were degrees of burns above 3rd.
I mean, I wouldn't be able to tell you if there are, but I guess they're saying, you know, that maybe at that level it is considered a radiation burn. I don't know what the difference is. But
yeah, so maybe a 3rd degree burn is something that can only be made by forms of fire, and then when it's something else, then it's above 3rd.
At Leona Boris, please,
yeah,
help.
Science, please help us. I want to find out about
science correspondent.
I mean, I don't want to experience it, but I will have to find out about 5th and 6th degree burns.
Yeah,
nice,
I guess I was going to say, the indication is they bad burns.
Yeah, they're burned incredibly badly.
They're basically just charred skeletons at
this point. Like, at this point, I don't want to say put them out of their misery, but they're essentially crisped up chicken carcasses.
Oh my God.
And Mulder in this moment tries to put his own two and two together, essentially saying that all of his research he's done with close encounter mortalities, they died from radiation burns as well. So this clearly, in his purview,
like it's all the same,
is evidence that aliens are radioactive AF. So it probably means contact with an alien.
Yeah. And so, but the colonel's like, no, you guys got to leave. And that's when the doctor says, she stays. She's a doctor. I need all the help I can get. He's like, something about how it's his ER.
Right. And so while Scully,
it's very intense.
Yeah. So while Scully does her own medical drama outside
she
of that,
she puts her hair in a pony, she puts on some scrubs,
and she gets to work. But she does give Mulder that tip that you mentioned before of, hey, just so you know, because Mulder walks in, I believe, on Max having a fit.
Yes.
And, you know, Max then talks about, I started having seizures.
Yeah, he has an epileptic attack and he's on the ground convulsing and he's unaware of where he is. So, like, I don't know if this happens. I mean, so Max does say this hasn't happened for him in like 7 years. Mm-hmm. So I guess it's lucky that Mulder was there because like you could really hurt yourself when you have that.
Do you think it's every time these aliens show up, it happens to him?
Yes.
Interesting. So it's like they're showing up to town and they're giving your cell phone a ring and you just, this is a weird form of your cell phone ringing.
Yeah. And so I guess, so Mulder like puts him down, like lets him go to sleep and notices this little scar behind his ear.
Yeah, it looks like a chevron.
Yeah, it does. It's like a weird little triangle arrow-shaped scar.
It's almost like an arrow pointing to him. So if the aliens just need guidance, you know, look here.
Exactly. And so Mulder makes note of it, and we find out later that's because he's seen it before in other abductees. But he leaves him there and then goes back to the hotel and is looking at his, like, why did he bring these with him? I don't know, but he has files.
Well, I'm glad that it didn't get taken by Max. This is why you don't leave your stuff out in the open, Mulder.
Yeah, so he had former X-Files that also showed abductees with this little thing behind their ear. And that's when Scully comes in and is like, Mulder, tick-tock, we gotta go.
Yeah, and this is when
she's like, we can still make that plane.
She drops the bomb about the anti-schizophrenic medication. But I do love when we cut back to the green surveillance headquarters when this employee has
sassy.
When she's sassing the colonel saying, oh, a large meteor is crashing in the exact same spot as the first one. And oh, there's another meteor that's hovering outside of Wisconsin right now.
Yeah, so crazy. I just feel like with that, it's tough because you're given like an instance where you feel like, okay, now what?
Exactly. She can't do anything, but I do like that she was able to, hopefully she still had her job by the end of this exchange, that she was able to.
Yeah, I have a feeling they have a specific training and clearances that it's not so easy to replace somebody as a Doppler reader.
Not the easy way, at least. No. So it seems like more bogeys, more angels are on their way. Max is responding to, I think, their call. Some really interesting use of the fisheye here. He's sort of like rocking back and forth, and there's blood coming out of his ear, and he's like, make it stop.
Well, yeah, so The fish eye, I think, is us seeing from the aliens' perspective.
Oh, so they have fish eyes.
They have fish eyes. No, it's like whenever we see that view, I think we're supposed to think that that's the alien. So the alien comes into his room and like is like giving him a signal, I guess, that like he's going to be taken soon or whatever. And then his ears bleed, which is disgusting.
Yeah. And he's grabbing his scar. Maybe this is like a Harry Potter thing where the aliens tried to kill him, but instead they left a mark and it's connected them forever.
I don't think so, but maybe.
So then once the aliens leave, Max's scar never hurt again.
Stop.
So Mulder and Scully are now, Max is gone. They're going to go, because I believe they overhear a communique that they are going on the waterfront. They could have been a contender.
They Here found they him are. At the waterfront. But yeah, because Mulder tries to convince Scully to check on Max before they leave for the airport. Can we at least go check on him? He's
sick.
Can
we check on the resident weirdo, please?
Well, no, Mulder's, I think, genuine concern at this point. He's like, he's really sick. Like, he wasn't doing well. I just want to make sure he's okay. And they go and he's not there. So they overhear the communique that they're chasing Max on the waterfront is what they believe.
And they find him in some sort of warehouse. Something that you pointed out while we were watching that I thought was really funny was that Scully walks out the door of the warehouse to the military, you know, taking over the place. And the military, despite seeing a door easily available, blows a hole in the warehouse.
They literally grab Scully as she's exiting the building, like through just a regular door, and then simultaneously like put mines on a like a big wall so that they can blow it up.
Does infrastructure mean nothing to you people?
No, clearly not. But yeah, so they see into this warehouse, they see Max, they see Scully, they see Mulder, that at least their heat signatures. And Mulder and Scully and Max are all having this conversation where Max is like scared he's going to be taken, and Mulder's trying to calm him down, and then a big bright light comes and bam.
Throws Mulder away, and then Max is hovering surrounded in this blue light like he's ascended to another form. And then when we check back in with the military after they stupidly blow a hole instead of using the damn door, Kool-Aid
Man
style.
There's only one heat signature left, and that's Mulder.
And all that's left is the nightcap hat.
It's the hat. Oh, poor Max.
The nightcap cap.
So where did Max go? What do you think?
Yeah, so it's a big question. I mean, from what we saw, my belief is that he was abducted by aliens. And ordinarily, I would say, okay, that was a fun one-time character. But from what I heard, Angela, and again, this is going to spoil some parts of the rest of the series, so feel free to fast forward right now if you don't want to necessarily hear about it. I don't know if we'll cover this in future episodes either, but Max, true to what you said in the very beginning, is going to come back at least a couple times.
Yeah, so I do think actually we will be covering the arc with Max.
Oh, good. I like that little goober.
Yeah. So we'll see him again. And I think that it's also not really a spoiler. One of the episodes in the arcs is titled Max.
Unless there's someone else named Max.
I think it's Max and Tempest Fugit maybe are the two episodes. So yeah, no, we'll see him again. And I think it'll shed some light on some things from a like abduction perspective. But I think this is fine. If you were only see this and you were not to watch those episodes, you'd still get a good understanding of him and sort of his implication to the whole, arc in general, just because aliens exist as of now.
What I can imagine, maybe it's because my view of aliens in this series is only from this episode and the first episode. I wonder if they're going to try to use Max as some sort of envoy for something. Again, don't say anything. That's my sort of leading theory at this point, because why would they necessarily need him back? You know, he was abducted when he was 10. What would they want with him now?
And I think it's also important to keep in mind that there is a government conspiracy and nothing is certain.
Yeah. And well, then the government line right now is that, oh, we just found Max's body in a shipping container. Nothing happened. He's dead. The end. Don't look into it.
Yeah, exactly. So why does the government know that?
So that being said, after all this, they finally make their way back to Washington.
We back.
Exactly. I wonder if they just took a later flight or if they were...
clearly, they missed their flight.
What if they just held that plane the entire time waiting for Mulder and Scully?
I don't think so, but it's possible.
So here we are. It's Mulder's hearing. Mulder got hurt in that scuffle. He broke his leg.
Yeah, he's a little like limpy, but I think
old limpy Mulder.
Yeah, he's like crutching into the room, but like again, Mulder, keep it together. He's just so petulant in this hearing.
Yeah. Well, like, and Scully tries to
make a statement.
Tries to gild the lilies a bit. You know, she's brought in. She basically says...
She says yes, no to answer questions.
Yeah, she denies any involvement in anything. She speaks out of turn, actually, says it's unfair to judge Mulder basically by the same criteria that she's being judged.
Yeah.
I think Mulder, at this point, he sees what he thinks is the writing on the wall. He muses to Scully. You hear that noise, hammer and nails. They're building a gallows in the town square.
Yeah, so dramatic. But yeah, I mean, I think for him, it's like... He would rather go out with a bang than continue the...
Or with a crutch, than continue,
like, sort of the bullshit of, like, trying to, like, make peace with this, you know, clearly obnoxious, disbelieving sort of leadership that he's under.
That's an interesting point, that could this have been sort of a breaking point moment for Mulder, where at this point now he's like,
well, he almost got proof. Yeah, this is like, this happens a lot to Mulder.
I was gonna say, we saw in the first episode, he literally saw that girl next to Billy Miles get beamed up, so he sees aliens so many times.
Yeah, this poor guy, but he's also never convinced that he's actually seen it. That's the hard part, is like, if somebody's not there to witness it with you, he's like, I can't say for sure what I saw. Like, he's never 100% sure what he actually saw, so... I think for him, it's just so frustrating. And there's all this proof and it's a mess. And it's like, it's when you have your email box full of emails and you open one and you start to answer it. And then you look up and you open another one and then you start to answer it. And then now you have two emails open that you're answering. And then you look at your inbox and there's seven other more emails and they're all different things. And you just get like overwhelmed by the options of like which path to go down.
Mm.
And that is what Mulder's dealing with, the X-Files.
Mulder,
I knew I related.
Mulder probably has the most unruly email inbox, by the way. No folders.
Oh, no.
No tabs.
No.
He has about like 3,000 unread emails.
Oh, no.
Where he's just like, I'll skip past this.
I need
this.
To go take a Xanax.
I skip past this this Gap offer. I'll leave it unread for now in case I get back
does
to it.
Does he even know how to use filters?
I don't think he does.
No.
And then he opens emails from people, forward, open this, and you have 7 years, good luck. He really believes in that.
You don't get those in your inbox anymore.
So that goes directly to spam. Directly, but no, I think Mulder looks in spam because he's thinking, what email addresses does Gmail not
there?
Want us to know about?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. It sounds like a nightmare to me.
But this is, like you said, Mulder has had it at this point. He is quite literally on his last leg.
Yeah.
And he rails against this panel, this tribunal, basically saying, how can I disprove lies that are stamped with an official seal? Essentially saying, I'm telling you what the truth is. You keep pushing back against me, even though I'm telling you the truth.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what I can do. I keep running up against a brick wall. And unlike the military, I don't have dynamite to blow it up.
Yeah. And he's also just like, I refuse to let go. Like, he's not going to. He's not going to just like stop investigating.
Yeah,
and that's what he's saying.
And he throws out a little bit of a threat as well. No government agency has jurisdiction over the truth.
No government agency has jurisdiction over the truth.
He basically says too many people know what's going on. Maybe that's the thing, is that him getting into contact with Max and the introduction of NICAP has made him realize that he has not been screaming into a void.
Yeah.
That there are people out there who believe the same thing he does. And it's more so empowered him to think, there's no way this thing can remain undercover for that long.
Yeah, and with Deep Throat giving him all these clues and all these like insights, like he knows that he's not the only one thinks he's not the only one like questioning it.
And so, on the note of Deep Throat, let's end with our big final twist here.
Yeah.
Despite the disciplinary hearing, Mulder is here to stay for now.
X-Files remain open.
Yeah, as Deep Throat essentially makes the argument that his insubordination is less dangerous than him exposing what he knows. And I gotta say, I give kudos to Deep Throat here.
Yeah.
I think this is a good move. The devil you know is better than the devil you don't, especially if this devil has information on you.
Yeah, I guess the confusing part here is like it's unclear at this point what Deep Throat's sort of modus operandi is. Like, is he trying to help Mulder, or is he just trying to keep
modus operandi?
Yeah, or is he just trying to keep him like supplicant so like he's not like out there like spilling the truth?
Right.
You know, it's like he's helping him find the truth at the same time.
I think he
reports it to somebody. So it's, you know, it's all just, it's just this big long chain of command.
Yeah, but I think at this point, it's a good idea to sort of keep him in your pocket.
Yes.
It's, you know, keeping the unruly kid in class busy with something constructive. Now, granted, because at the end of the day, who is Mulder going to take the information to? Because the government's going to shut him down no matter what. He gains more power when he doesn't have that government holding something above him, like a job. And so I think this is a perfect way to...
He almost wants them to like kick him out at this point.
Exactly.
But then he doesn't have the resources, and that's key.
So he essentially is oiling that squeaky wheel, but also like putting it in the trunk as the spare.
Yeah. So that'll become clearer, I think, but it's something to keep an eye on.
And so that is Fallen Angel. A little bit of, I mean, it definitely is more of a serialized episode. Mm-hmm. And we leave things, I guess, on a bit of a cliffhanger in that, like you said, we are left to question more of Deep Throat's motives, him playing all sides, it seems. So it's an interesting spot to leave things and to sort of leave season one, because Angela, next week is our last week of season one, but also our first week of season two.
I was going to say, aren't we doing the season finale and then the season premiere?
Exactamundo, m'lady. Next week, we are doing season one, episode 24, the Erlenmeyer Flask. Yeah, Erlenmeyer Flask, which is the finale of season one. And we're also doing season two, episode one, Little Green Men, because I believe that you told me that X-Files likes to do arcs that occur at the end of one season and the beginning of another.
Yeah, and it's not always the case, but I do think it will be good for our podcast in general to close out a season and then begin a season, and it'll help us sort of say, like, okay, the season finales at least tend to wrap things up really well. Mm-hmm. I won't say that the season premieres are always perfect, because then sometimes the season premieres are two-parters as well. So then you have, I think I even put it in there. I think we have one where it's like, it's the season finale and then the season premiere and then the next episode, because it's just, they have this big long arc and it's, you know, but I do think that, you know, they do tend to do that a lot, and it's helpful, I think, for our listeners to, you know, maybe wrap things up in a little bit of a clearer way.
So if I could hazard a guess as to what the Erlenmeyer Flask is about.
You cannot.
Well, it's a piece of laboratory equipment. I know that. So here's the plot.
Hit me.
They find a way to get alien DNA in this Erlenmeyer Flask. And the plot is they're going to try to clone an alien. They're going to try to use DNA Jurassic Park style to replicate an alien. And now there's a bunch of back and forth as to whether or not they should do it, how dangerous it is. And it segues into little Green Men, in which the DNA replicated aliens do come alive. And in true Michael Crichton style, they go wonky. Things go bad, but they end up eradicating them by the end of it. I'm assuming I am nowhere close.
I'm not going to tell you.
All right. Well, then I'm just going to assume then on my own. But that being said, we're going to do a lot next week. Not only are we covering season one, episode 24 and season two, episode one, but we are finally, folks, getting to your feedback. So if you have any thoughts about the episodes we've seen so far, including season one, episode one, pilot, season one, episode three, Squeeze, season one, episode 21, Tombs, season one, episode 10, Fallen Angel, as well as the Erlenmeyer Flask and Little Green Men, please write it into us. We'll do sort of a catch-all feedback quickie at the end of next week's episode, where we go through some of your thoughts. We've been already receiving them so far.
And just a reminder about emails, if it's spoiler filled, just make sure you put that in the subject line so that Mike does not read it.
Right. So you can ask questions. We probably won't read them on air, but things like,
but I can maybe make it work.
Yeah. How does this influence this, et cetera, et cetera. I've been so happy with the response so far. It's been very fun to see people from really both camps, people who absolutely love the X-Files and people like me who are watching it for the first time.
Yeah. We've had a lot of people say, I've never watched this, but I guess I will. Yeah. I think that's the quarantine of it all, too.
Yeah, but this is exciting, because that was the entire onus of this podcast. So we're bringing together so many Mulders and Scullies under one roof, and we're going to be hearing from you next week. So you can always tweet at us. I am at @AMikeBloomType. Angela is at @AngePelagi. And of course, the network is at @PoShowRecaps. You can also email us for more long-term pieces of feedback. You can either email xfiles@poshowrecaps.com or bloomfiles@poshowrecaps.com. I try to give a little bit of a read to it to make it seem nice and
fun. It's very cool.
Yeah, but it's really the goofiest email to the Gallant email. We luckily have things nice and stratified in our email inboxes, unlike Fox Mulder.
That's great. That makes me happy.
Well, that's going to do it for this week's episode of The Bloom Files. We're going to take off in our own bogey right now, away from Wisconsin. We've been in the snow this entire week, so we definitely have felt like we're part of the Midwest right now, in the middle of winter. But we'll hopefully get to warmer prospects next week with the Erlenmeyer Flask and Little Green Men, the season one finale, season two premiere, plus your feedback. I'm very excited to keep on going through the X-Files into another season. Special thanks to Corey B for his fantastic theme song. We'll see you all next week for another edition of the Bloom Files. For now, case closed.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.